Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by. We are about to begin. Good day and welcome to the quarterly EN conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Rob Paff. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. We're glad that you could be with us. We have a lot of information to cover, so without further ado, I'll just get us started. The first thing that I'd like to cover with everyone is that the White House, on April 13th, announced that they have nominated Andrew M. Saul of New York to be Commissioner of Social Security for the remainder of a six-year term expiring January 19th, 2019, and for an additional six-year term expiring January 19th, 2025. Mr. Saul is presently commissioner for Westchester County, New York. He has also previously served as he has an extensive list of experience. He was the former board member of the United Jewish Appeal Federation of New York. He's a graduate of Wharton School of Finance at the University of Pennsylvania and serves on its board of overseers. In addition to Mr. Saul's nomination, David Fabian Black of North Dakota was also nominated to be Deputy Commissioner of Social Security for the remainder of a six-year term expiring January 19, 2019. Mr. Black currently serves as the White House Senior Advisor at the Social Security Administration. He served as SSA's General Counsel from October 2007 until July 2015, and additionally, Mr. Black is a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserve, where he deployed to both Afghanistan and Iraq in support of the global war on terrorism and earned a Bronze Medal Star. Mr. Black holds a Juris Doctor from the University of Minnesota and a bachelor's degree in political science from the University of North Dakota. So as those nominations are considered in the Senate, if we hear any additional news to pass along, we will keep you updated on the progress of those nominations. The next thing I'd like to cover briefly is our participation, myself and our staff in ORDES, in the Council for State Administrators for Vocational Rehabilitation Conference, which occurred in April of 2018 in Bethesda, Maryland. This is the annual spring conference that's held. In addition to our staff providing support and training on cost reimbursement to new VR staff, we also held a session to go over the benefits of Partnership Plus. For those of you who are not familiar with Partnership Plus, it is a terrific opportunity for vocational rehabilitation agencies to essentially hand off their clients once their case is closed to employment networks, who at that point continue to provide ongoing employment support services. This is really beneficial to all parties involved. The employment network, the VR, and the beneficiary, the EN and the VR work out an arrangement in terms of what services will be provided. Those things are spelled out between the two entities. The beneficiary gets the intensive vocational rehabilitation training and other services that only VR can provide up front. And then from that point forward, the employment network works with the individual as they transition in the work or helps support them if they're already employed, providing the unique personalized services that employment networks can provide. So really, it's the best of both worlds in terms of the Ticket to Work program. We're encouraging both VRs and ENs to expand and consider working in these arrangements. And if you have any additional questions, just reach out to us at the end of this call, and we'd be happy to provide more information on that. So the next thing I'd like to cover with you is to introduce some new talent that we've been able to bring into the organization, and this is very exciting. And as part of our ever ongoing reality that things change organizationally and programmatically, Over the course of about the past year or so, we've had three managers retire. We've lost effectively, I estimate, about 100 years of programmatic experience with the loss of those managers. We've lost Mark Green, Desiree Fitzgerald, and Carol Cohen. We wish them the best and are happy for them. But, of course, replacing that expertise is challenging. I think we've done a really good job in finding two new members of the team who are going to make tremendous contributions moving forward, and I'm excited for you to get to know both of them. The first person that I'd like to introduce to you is Janelle Bratcher, who's the new OTOPS Deputy Office Director. So without further ado, I'd like to turn it over to Janelle to briefly introduce herself to you. Janelle?
Thanks, Bob. I'm very excited to be the new Deputy Director of the Office of Ticket Operations and Provider Support, which is frequently referred to as OTOPS. OTOPS has the responsibility for administering and oversight of VR cost reimbursement and EM payments. I've been with SSA for about roughly 14 years and recently served as a senior policy analyst before assuming this new role as deputy director for OTOPS. Very soon, I will be participating in a site visit, and I'll be able to get firsthand knowledge about the work of ENs. I am very excited to work with the ticket program and learn more about the ENs. And I think that's all for now. Thank you, Rob, for letting me introduce myself, and I can't wait to work with you all.
Thank you, Janelle. And the great thing about this is that we get one manager in our OTOPS division and we get one manager in our OBOS division, so we're really balanced out with our new talent that we're able to bring in. So with that in mind, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Patrice McLean, who is already familiar to many of you, but I would like to ask her, she is our new OBOS branch chief, and I'd like to ask her to come on the line and just briefly introduce herself to those who may not be familiar with her. So, Patrice.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for the introduction, Rob. Again, my name is Patrice McLean. Many of you are familiar with me from previous all-EN calls, some via site visit and some having participated in a few proofs of concept orchestrated by the Office of Beneficiary Outreach and Employment Support. I've been with Social Security for just under 8 years. I started as a disability examiner where I learned how to process continuing disability reviews and employee work incentives to make adjudicated decisions on working beneficiaries. I also spent some time working on the BOND project, the Benefit Offset National Demonstration Project. And more recently, I led three proofs of concept, which is how many of you probably are aware of me. On that note, I did want to say I'm very, very happy to serve as the branch chief of the Employment Network Service Grants and Contracts Management Teams. But I don't want you to think that the proofs of concepts are not going to continue. The BPQY proofs of concepts will be led by Carol Dempsey. And for those with questions about that proof of concept, can email ordes.bpqy.poc@ssa.gov. Again, that's ordes, O-R-D-E-S, .bpqy.poc@ssa.gov. Those who are participating in the wage reporting proof of concept, that will now be led by Melanie Porter. And for questions regarding the wage reporting proof of concept, you can contact Melanie at ordes.wagereporting.poc@ssa.gov. Again, that's ordes.wagereporting.poc@ssa.gov. And lastly, the marketing proof of concept will be led by Terry Lesko. And with questions, you can contact marketing.supports@ssa.gov. Again, that's marketing.supports@ssa.gov. I will not be completely rid of those projects. I still have a hand in each of them, but I do look forward to working with you more closely as the branch chief of the Employment Network Service Branch. Thank you so much, and with that, I will turn over to Alyssa, who will discuss our timely progress review.
Thank you, Patrice. Good afternoon, everyone. We restarted TPR on March 17th. 100 selection letters were sent out nationally, but because of the selection process, the vast majority were sent to VRs and ENs in the Boston region. And I would also like to say that actually very few out of the 100, in fact only about 5, went to ENs. In addition to the 100 selection letters, 25 Bennies, again the majority from the Boston region, actually passed TPR based on earnings that were in our administrative databases. To date, we have about 33 passes, 27 failures, and 60-plus pendings. At this time, the portal is not open for TPR passes by the service providers. But because this is a live process, meaning that final TPR failures will result in the loss of CDR protection, we encourage you to offer any assistance that you possibly can to your Bennies regarding TPR. You will receive training on the portal prior to its being opened for TPR passes by all service providers. There will be no opting out of TPR by service providers as soon as we open up the portal. However, we will be explaining during the training that if you don't respond timely to the TPRs, Maximus will actually be adjudicating the cases as long as the Benny has returned the 1375, which is part of the selection letter, timely. In addition, we also plan to schedule general TPR training for all service providers. We had done this about a year ago. We think that at this point, now that we're actually starting up again, we feel that it would be beneficial to everyone to get this type of training again. And we do plan to schedule this, again, for all service providers. We plan to schedule it very, very soon. The other thing is that we have been validating the ITOP system, which is really the basis for our selections and for our adjudication, and so far everything has been going fine. And if it continues to go well, our validations, we do plan to release another 100 or so selection letters again very, very soon, probably within the next few weeks. If you do have any questions regarding TPR, they can be directed to TPR Help Desk at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And that basically is what I plan to say at this point. I'm just introducing what we have done thus far with restarting TPR and our selection letters and basically where we are. So I think that Adele was going to open the lines if you have any specific TPR questions.
Yes, thank you so much, Alyssa. Stephanie, if you can open up, we'll take a few questions regarding TPR. Thanks again for that information, Alyssa.
You're welcome.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And there are no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, thank you. And with that, I will go ahead and hand this over to Jamie Pendergraft with Outreach.
Thanks so much, Adele. Hi, everyone. It's Jamie Pendergraft. I am the Program Outreach Manager for TPM, and I have a couple things we'd like to talk with you a bit about today. we are excited to announce a couple of new resources that are now available to you all. The first is a resource that is about work plans, and we structured it as a frequently asked question, and it is now available on our website, and we do encourage you to use that resource with your audience. And John, can you go ahead and share that link for me? And the second new resource I wanted to mention was in late March, we released what we called our 2017 Year in Review Success Stories. And John just posted that link in the chat pod for you all. And it's a recap of all of our success stories that we published in 2017. So we did publish 6 different success stories that year. And the video gives an overview, a very brief example of what each success story talks about, and then gives the beneficiary audience some next steps on where to go to get additional information. And lastly, I wanted to talk a bit about some volunteer opportunities. As I'm sure you've heard me mention before, we're always looking for volunteer presenters on our WISE webinars. We have a variety of different topics and are always looking for people of different expertise to join us to present on our webinar. For example, this month we'll be talking about working for the federal government. Last month we talked about Ticket to Work for Young Adults. So we really do span a wide range of topics with those WISE events. And if anyone would like to volunteer or would like to help promote those WISE webinars, you can feel free to send me an email. And John, go ahead and send out my email address in the chat box. And then another really great way to volunteer and really showcase your expertise as an employment network is by working with us to create a success story. As I hope you're all aware, we do feature our success stories on the Choose Work website, as well as in the Ticket to Work service provider resource list. We feature our success stories very regularly through social media and also send out a lot of information via Gov Delivery, and we feature them in our WISE webinars as well. And success stories are a great way for you to help show some of the tools you've given beneficiaries to become financially independent. And we have been hearing recently from some of you that you've been contacted by a woman named Ariel Doro. And we do want to let you know that's okay. She is with Maximus, and she is our success story coordinator. And feel free to continue to follow up with folks if you do have questions about her, but she is legitimately asking for some success story leads. You're also more than welcome to contact me if you have any ideas for success stories, and I'll be happy to connect you with Ariel. Now I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about today's presentation. As I mentioned, I'm the program outreach manager for TPM, so that means one of my main responsibilities is overseeing the development of all of our social media content. And we do have a couple of different social media sites that I'd like for us to get more familiar with today. The slide you're seeing now is our social media channels for beneficiaries. We do focus primarily on Facebook and Twitter. And the beneficiary Facebook account is at ChooseWork with an exclamation point. And the Twitter account is at ChooseWorkSSA. And you can recognize those accounts on Facebook by the banner you can see in this presentation. We have a couple of different images of some of our success stories. Next slide, please. The next slide shows our service provider social media. And these accounts are on Facebook at Your Ticket to Work and on Twitter at Ticket to Work. And we have a feature here again from one of our success stories. And since I did mention that I am a content developer, so we're always looking for new resources to share and new ways to promote the Ticket program, as well as some other organizations in addition to the Ticket program, we share other federal resources and really any content that will be of interest to beneficiaries who are looking to return to work. So I know how difficult it can be to find great content to share on your social media account. We hope that you'll be interested in utilizing some of these social media platforms to share some of our social media with your audiences, since we do all have very similar audiences. And I do want to go into the difference between these two accounts. The beneficiary account is where you'll see, of course, our beneficiary-focused content. You'll find information about our success stories, our upcoming WISE events, pages on our website. You might see the Meet Ben video featured on there a couple times. And like I said, we also provide some content and links to other organizations and other federal agencies that serve the ticket holder audience. The service provider social media site, which is the slide that's up now, is where you'll find information that will be useful to you. We'll provide some training materials, some different articles about the state of the program, and it is more EN and service provider focused. With all of that said, the way that you can help or you can begin utilizing some of our content, there are a couple of different ways. The first is every month we send at least one sample social media message out for your use. These messages are sent via GovDelivery, and they often focus on WISE events, but they also include new resources like the fact sheet I mentioned, new success stories, and a variety of other information. We would truly appreciate your help in spreading the word about those WISE events. Your audiences are the ones who can benefit from our webinars the most, and we want to make sure that we're able to get to a lot of beneficiaries, and your assistance through social media would truly be helpful. John, can you go to the next slide? I did want to briefly cover, again, like I said, here's a couple of examples of what our social media posts look like on Choose Work. We share our blogs twice a week at least, and I've pulled a graphic from there as well. Next slide, please. I also wanted to briefly touch on another way that you can share our posts without using that pre-developed content that we send out via GovDelivery. On Facebook, to share a post, you just log into Facebook. You find our page, which in this case is Choose Work. And once you see a post on Facebook, you can select the Share button. When you hit that Share button, it'll give you the opportunity to write your own lead. So if you wanted to say something extra about our post, you certainly can. Or you can also just simply share it and say post automatically to my page. Next slide, please. This is how to share a sample or social media post on Twitter. It does show Choose Work again. And the way you would share a post on Twitter is by logging into Twitter, finding at Choose Work SSA, and from there, you can either retweet or like the post. To like the post, there's a little heart icon. And to retweet the post, there are two arrows kind of, they look like they're in a circle kind of. So that is how you like and retweet content on Twitter. And again, we hope that these posts are able to help you build some of your content. We want you to use them as kind of a foundation. You know, we're here to provide some content for you to use and would like you to start using it and sharing it as well. And before I introduce Lori Adler, I did want to go through one more slide. The next slide, John. We do know that this was just really a very brief overview of Facebook and Twitter and how to like posts, and we do have a much more in-depth training for service providers. It is the EN marketing course, and it has two marketing modules. One is overview and planning, and the other is program-specific resources. That program-specific resources section is where you're going to find all of those links and information about the WISE webinars, the success stories, and a variety of different resources. that we share on a regular basis. And if you would like more detailed information about marketing your EN, you can sign up to take one or both training modules. And to do this, you'll need to email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Next up, I'm very happy to welcome Lori Adler. Lori is a senior marketing liaison with Employment Options, which is an employment network. And she's going to talk a little bit about how Employment Options has helped share some of ChooseWorks content and some tips she has as a marketing liaison for her EN. So, Lori, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll let you take it away.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much, Jamie, and thank you for having me today. Like Jamie said, I do help manage Employment Options marketing and communications departments, and I've been with the company for about 7 years now. If you're not familiar with Employment Options, we are a virtual EN, and we assist Ticket to Work clients in 47 states. And we specialize in work-at-home employment, but we also offer on-site local jobs to our clients as well. And Paula Viea is our founder and CEO. I'm also in the Ticket to Work program personally myself, and I'm working because of the program, and I'm here today because of what it has done for me. Employment Options was my assigned EN to begin with, and they helped me find a work-at-home job years ago. And then Paula had a marketing position open, and I applied for that, and now I am a junior manager with the company. The Ticket to Work program has been life-changing for me, and I'm very grateful for what it has done for me. And my colleague Lisa Seeley and I, you might have seen her name as well, we've both been interviewed in the past by Ticket to Work and Social Security as well about working from home. As Jamie said, her team has asked me to speak briefly on our use of social media as an EN, and we wanted to tell you about a special Twitter project that we started this year as well. As I mentioned, Paula hired me to help with our company's social media and online marketing and help grow these platforms and try to get the word out to more people about Ticket to Work as well as our services. And as many of you know, social media in the past, 7 to 9 years has exploded and is changing and always having new features. We have used social media for many years now and for many reasons, including to help grow our brand, reach new Ticket to Work applicants, bring awareness to the program, and we also help promote our online events, including our national job fairs and webinars that we host throughout each year. And for many years, we especially have used Facebook in all different aspects and capacities, and we use that, as Jamie touched on, to touch on things that would benefit ticket holders and people who are new to the program, such as posting our job openings or special Ticket to Work news, events, our contests, or things that will help our clients. And social media has also helped us connect with new agencies and partners as well, just by using those different platforms. We do regularly follow what ChooseWork and Ticket to Work post about on Facebook and tweet about, and we do try to like, share, and retweet that, which Jamie covered. And we do that also because it gives us credibility for what we are posting on our page, because it tells our viewers that, you know, we're under Social Security. And it helps get the word out even more about Ticket to Work as well. And there is power in numbers for sure. Because we know if we can't help someone, we want others to know there are agencies out there in the program besides us, you know, that they can contact. For us, social media has really helped grow the business immensely. And we reach many more people over the years than we could have imagined. And social media continues to change and give us new options. Currently, we use Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Pinterest in some capacity regularly. Twitter has become more popular in the past few years, especially in the last year or two, and we're very active there as well. And, of course, what's neat about social media is that a good portion of it, you know, that you can do is free to your company. There are some paid options that you can use if you choose to reach even more people. One of the reasons Jamie and her team asked me to join the call today is to talk about a special Twitter project that my CEO, Paula Viea, helped launch earlier this year within our company. internally first. It was something we've been using this year, after she had read an online article about the Ticket to Work program. Paula has been involved, as many of you may know, with Ticket to Work since it started. And like all of you, we are aware of so many positive stories from clients about how the program has truly changed the lives of many people with disabilities and their families, including my own life and other people I know as well. We wanted to get a way to get that positive message out to more and more people, so we started a Twitter initiative, and we created the hashtag TTW helped me. And the reasoning behind the idea was if Paula had a meeting with someone in D.C. or some of our staff met with someone, whether in person or by phone, we can quickly pull up the Twitter hashtag in the search in Twitter and look at all the different positive stories or quotes or comments that we've posted on our Twitter feed, no matter when that was, and they're all in one place. And we were very excited about this, and I spoke briefly on the NIDA meeting about it, and we thought it would be a great idea if other ENs, if they choose to, could also share positive quotes or positives from clients on their Twitter pages as well and use the hashtag TTW helped me, because, you know, there's power in numbers, and we wanted to get the positives out, you know, to a broader audience. It allows us in our social media now to share a more personal side to our posts and not just about, you know, events or regular services, and it gives real examples of happy and changed clients who were helped by the program. For the project, we do have a very set and specific process in mind that we use, or process internally that we use before any quote or positive is put on our social media, so that we are protecting clients and staff. So if any ENs are interested in using the hashtag initiative or learning more about it, Jamie advised that you are free to contact me directly, and I believe they're putting my email in the chat, but I will read it now as well. My email is LAD, as in David, LER, at myemploymentoptions.com, and I would be happy to talk about it or explain it in a little more detail. For me, Ticket to Work, both personally and at work, is an amazing program, and as Jamie touched on, you know, every share and like and post and tweet can really get awareness out there and reach even more and more people to learn about the program. So that is all I had about the Twitter project and a little comment on what we do with social media, and I hope that was helpful. Thank you, Jamie,
for
having me.
Oh, yes, it certainly was. Thank you so much, Lori. We'll open up the line for a few questions, if you don't mind addressing some of those. Stephanie, can you help us out with that?
Absolutely. Again, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Lauren Womack from Lafayette Consolidated Government.
Hi,
Lauren.
Hi, my name is Lauren. Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I have a question, and maybe somebody could offer me some advice on an issue that I'm having with kind of outreach locally. I have clients coming into my office, and it seems like some of the front staff at our local Social Security office is maybe misrepresenting the Ticket to Work program. I have a lot of clients that come in and expect they think that we have jobs open and we're going to give them a job. And it's happened over and over again, and I had one client that was really angry with me because she felt like it was misrepresented. Some people are told locally and some people are told over the phone. I just wanted to see if other ENs are experiencing the same issues, and if so, I reached out to the local office, and they said that they were going to, you know, handle it. I offered to give them information and training about it, but I'm concerned if it's coming through the phone lines as well, how do we address this problem?
Okay, thank you for your question, Lauren. We were taking questions for Lori in her presentation, but if someone from...
I'm sorry. We can wait till the end.
That's okay. If someone can take a moment and maybe address that with some Social Security.
Yeah, hi, this is Rob. I guess in regards to the information provided from the local field office, if you could reach out to our EN services folks and let us know where you're located, and we will try to put you in touch with the Area Work Incentives Coordinator. My question is, I don't know if you're familiar with who that is, but that's the Social Security, I guess, designated expert your area that handles all sort of issues between, you know, ticket to work service providers and Social Security staff. And I think that would be helpful as well. I would look to folks from Maximus to weigh in regards to what's being relayed from, I'm thinking maybe the call center, and if there's anything being relayed to beneficiaries about ENs providing jobs through the call center. And I don't think that's the case, but I would ask somebody at Maximus if they have any thoughts or feedback that they'd like to provide on that.
Thank you. Just curious, Lori Armstrong, are you still on the line? Okay. Lori is our beneficiary support manager, and she was on the line earlier. And I am aware of the information that's provided, and you're right, Rob. It isn't information that's indicating that the ENs have jobs for them. So you were right on point with that.
Yeah, so this is Gary Rao from Social Security. So we would be interested, as Rob said, to hear something specific about what you've been hearing, and you could send us that in through EN service. I think you characterized it as something that's coming to you at least as from the field offices. We know that there are some issues where there's some miscommunications that have occurred. We've taken some steps to try to get Ticket to Work training out to some of the newer members of the field office staff. But we also can work internally with the component and central office that oversees the field offices. So if you could share that information with us through the EN service mailbox, we will try to look into that for you.
Thank you for that, Gary. And, Lauren, thank you for that question. And it seems like this question you have some remarks in the chat as well. So it seems like it's not an isolated incident. We'll make sure that we do the best to address this. At the moment...
Adele, I'm sorry. This is Melanie. I just wanted to add one thing. I know that our call center manager is not on the line, but I will say that at the call center, I know all of our customer service representatives do, you know, explain what the program is, and they talk about service providers in terms of what an employment network can provide, and they give examples of that as well as the state VR agency. And even though they go through that and explain and give examples, there are still beneficiaries who sometimes, you know, are confused and think that employment networks or service providers are synonymous with employers. So even though we try to drive that home, sometimes not everybody walks away with that same understanding. So I can assure you that we do explain it, but it still, you know, leads to confusion at times.
Okay.
This is Rob. I'm sorry. I just want to add to that. In general, for employment networks, if you don't already have, maybe a list of, you know, your local state workforce agency, or as they're also known as American Job Centers, you might want to have that ready as well to provide to people where they're the state agency that does a lot of direct job placement services. or any other local services available to individuals that, that help with job placement might be something you might want to have on hand.
Thank you, Rob. And again, thank you, Lauren. Are there any questions, Stephanie, for Lori Adler?
There are no current questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, I appreciate that. And I will go ahead and hand this over to Katie Strivinger with Portal Update.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. I just have two updates about information from the portal. The first is about tickets on assignments and terminations. If you are in the portal and see a ticket on assignment or a ticket termination that you don't believe is correct, you need to contact the program integrity team to research the issue, and the email address for that is programintegrity, one word, at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. You should submit the ticket information and any supporting documentation, such as an individualized work plan or IWP, to the inbox to confirm if the unassignment or termination was due to an error. The ticket information and any submitted documents should be encrypted using your EN's PIN. The second item is about the Ticket Portal User Guide. A blast went out to all active Ticket Portal users on April 12th, stating that to request a copy of the Ticket Portal User Guide, or if you have questions about the Ticket Portal, you should continue to email the Provider Support Helpline at ensystemshelp@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, or you can call the main number at 1-866-949-3687, and we'll have both of those email addresses appear in the chat line. So, for anything about an unassignment or termination that you believe is incorrect, you're going to contact Program Integrity. And to get a copy of the Ticket Portal User Guide, you need to contact EN Systems Help at yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. And I'm going to hand it over to Kara Kaplan.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have a couple of announcements to make. First, site visits. We're starting our annual site visits this year, and our first trip will be in 2 weeks, and they will go through September of this year. For those of you who have already responded to the notification, thank you. All the notifications have not gone out yet. We do appreciate your speedy response when you get the notification, because scheduling, as you may realize, is not always an easy thing. Our aim is to eventually get to every EN. What is new this year is our ticket program manager, Maximus, will accompany SSA this year on the visits. These visits help us immensely with our oversight of the program. We're also going to have training on June 12th. It will be held at 11 o'clock and 1 o'clock, and Maximus will follow up with a notification for the time. We'll cover the following topics in the training: updated policies that will be addressed in the Gov delivery about acceptable contact methods. We'll have an overview of services and supports review, the purpose and the processes, overview of the updated results and follow-up actions that will be effective starting in June. There have been recent policy updates. There's mandatory contact requirements, which everybody received a blast about. Just to reiterate a couple things, during the initial service phase, which is the pre-employment phase, EN should contact the ticket holder at a minimum of once a month. During the ongoing service phase, which is when your ticket holder is employed, EN should contact the ticket holder at a minimum quarterly for the entirety of the program, of the ticket assignment, rather. Approved contact attempts include individual phone calls, individual text messages, individual emails, and individual letters. Contacts that are considered marketing efforts and not necessarily individual contacts are mass emails, mass newsletter, and robocalls. SSA is not discouraging ENs from using these methods, but they won't be considered mandatory monthly contact or quarterly contact. If you are unable to contact your ticket holders, the EN should send a first-class letter. However, SSA does prefer a certified letter, but we're not mandating it, to ticket holders that they're having issues contacting. If the ticket holder is in the initial support phase, ENs must send the letter after 3 months of no contact. If they're in the ongoing support phase, a letter should be sent after 6 months, which is 2 quarters of no contact. TPM has posted sample language to be used for the letter. If a response as well as lack of responses, they should be recorded in the case notes. Copies of the letters should be in the case file. ENs should carefully document all contacts and attempted contacts with ticket holders within their case notes. TPM has posted templates online how to document voicemails and letters. The case notes will be used during a services and supports review to ensure that the EN is actively working with, contacting, and attempting to contact the ticket holders. We also have recently learned about changes to SAM. This is just a reminder that ENs must renew their SAM registration on a yearly basis. If you do not update your registration, you will not get paid, and you could potentially be terminated. It's recently come to our attention that SAM recently changed their requirements as they've taken proactive steps to address fraudulent activity. These steps include requiring an original, signed, notarized letter identifying the EN administrator associated with the DUNS number before a new SAM.gov entity registration will be activated or an existing one will be updated or renewed. And then finally, home offices. SSA is being given a lot more guidance on PII and security matters, and contractors are one of the agency's vulnerabilities. The Ticket to Work program has one of the largest contractor contingencies in the agency, and as a result, we're under a microscope. Therefore, we need to be proactive and ensure compliance. Every EN has signed off on it in the TPA, and so this is really nothing new. We've not received a written consent form from most of the ENs who have a home office. And I'll just read the TPA really quickly to you. It says, SSA routinely does not consider a person's private residence a secure area or duty station. ENs wishing to establish a secure area or duty station in a private residence must submit a written request to SSA at enservice@ssa.gov that includes a detailed description of the actions taken by the EN to ensure security, and 2, they must receive SSA's written approval prior to establishing a secure area or secure duty station to conduct this business. So like I said, we've not received this from most of the ENs who have home duty stations, and it is necessary to ensure the security of our ticket holders' records that you do send this. If we find out you have it and you don't have written permission from SSA to have it, sanctions may be taken against your EN. If you have any questions at all about this, you can please contact enservice@ssa.gov. And I will hand it off to Adele.
Thank you so much, Kara. Okay, so we're going to open up the lines for questions. And as you compile that for us, Stephanie, we do have some chat questions that we will go ahead and address. And the first question I have, I'm hoping, Patrice, are you still on the line?
Good afternoon. Yes, I am. I'm still here.
Okay, thank you. There were some questions that you were providing some emails, and we didn't quite catch that at the beginning. So would you be
Adele, I put them, this is Kara, I put them in the chat. They're in here.
Okay. And so those were for the POCs.
The three POCs, yep.
Okay, so appreciate that, so I won't have to bother you, Patrice.
No problem.
Thank you for being on the ready. Question number 2, we have from Lorraine Brown. Who do I speak to about reporting client wages to SSA?
This is Patrice. If you're looking to have an individual report wages, of course, they can go to their local field office. And they can also provide them through you, and you can submit them in the portal or send them to the CPM fax number. I'm not sure if I know the total context of your question. If you're discussing what I spoke about earlier, the wage reporting proof of concept, it applies to all ENs, but only for specific payments. That would be wages submitted with wage evidence through the portal for phase two milestone and outcome number one payments. If you'll email that ordes.wagereporting.poc@ssa.gov, I can give you more information and also provide a fact sheet. But if you're talking about just any beneficiary providing wages, they can submit that to their local field office, or they can send them to you, and you can submit them through the portal, or fax them in through the CPM fax number.
Okay, appreciate that. Thanks, Patrice.
Another question
from the chat. Stacy Clark asks, how often are site visits done for ENs? Yearly?
Well, this is Kara. We do site visits yearly, but it's not yearly on each EN because, unfortunately, we just don't have the amount of staff or the budget to be able to do that. So we do approximately 40 ENs a year.
Okay. Thank you. Question number four from Mai. If no response after two quarters, do we unassign the ticket?
It depends where you are in the phase, but if you're in the outcome phase and there's no response and you've sent a letter to the beneficiary and they've responded that they don't really want you to contact them, they're good, or they're not responding to you and you document that, you do not have to unassign that ticket. Where we probably would ask you to unassign is if you're in the beginning phases and you can't get in touch with the person.
Okay, we have another question. Does a letter need to be mailed every 3 months of no contact, or is the first attempt of certified mail sufficient?
I think the first attempt is sufficient.
Okay, we do have a few more chat questions, but I will go ahead and see. Stephanie, is there any questions in the queue?
There are no questions in the queue at this time. However, as a reminder to the phone audience, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad.
All right. Thank you for that. So I'll go on to the next chat question. Are the site visits because of the services and supports review that we had to fax a couple of weeks ago, or are they different?
Say that again, Adele.
Sure. Are the site visits because of the services and supports review that we had to fax a couple of weeks ago, or are they different?
Nobody's are from whatever took place 2 weeks ago. These are either because of service and support recommendations, but we've had these in the works for a couple of months now, which ENs we knew we were going to. And we go to ENs for a varied amount of reasons. There's not just one reason we go visit ENs.
Okay, appreciate that. Another question. Can you please provide guidance on what is personalized and unique contact?
It would be a personalized email, letter, phone call, text to your ticket holder, only to that ticket holder, addressing that ticket holder with what you are offering them. Or checking up on them or, you know.
Okay. Another question from the chat. Does a form have to be filled out and placed in files for each time we contact a beneficiary?
Yes.
Okay. Another question from the chat. What if we send a letter and there continues to be no contact? However, the EN is attempting contact. What is SSA's action going to be in these cases?
Like I said before, it depends where you are in the process with the ticket holder.
And we do have another question from the chat.
And let me just stop you for a second, Adele.
Sure.
All of this will be addressed in the training on the 12th. So we do encourage every EN to join one of those two sessions.
Very good. And for ENs providing benefits counseling, some ticket holders may not return calls until they have a question about their benefits, which will eventually happen. Don't we want to be premature in unassigning those tickets? Okay, I understand the question now. They're basically saying we don't want to be premature in unassigning those particular tickets.
But if you're in the beginning phases and you're not in contact with that beneficiary, you're not helping them. So there's no reason to keep that ticket assigned.
Okay. Stephanie, are there any questions in queue?
Yes, we do have several questions. We'll take
okay.
Lorraine Brown from Divina Dussard Incorporated.
Hi, Lorraine.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, okay, so I have been trying to report my client's wages to the email address that was given to the fax number, and I've emailed Employment Network Payment Help Desk that your ticket to work, and they told me that what I'm supposed to do to report their wages is go to the ticket portal and view pending payments for me, and then locate the payment request and click on actions for that reference number, select fax additional information to create a new fax cover sheet, and select the document type you plan to send, save and or print the fax cover sheet, and ensure that the fax cover sheet is the first page of your document behind it. Is that, like, I don't quite, could you explain that in more detail, like, exactly how am I supposed to report each of my client wages? They give me their paycheck stubs and they want me to report it for them. So when I went in the portal, I was not understanding how I'm supposed to do that.
Hello, this is Deborah on Tennessee from Maximus. I believe the instructions you were given was for a situation where you had previously submitted a payment request through the through the ticket portal. Those instructions are if you have previously submitted a payment request and you later want to add submit additional earnings, that you have to print off a cover fax sheet that you the additional copy of that fax sheet if you didn't already have one, so that when you fax in those earnings, those pay stubs or whatever you have, that information will be associated with the payment request that you previously faxed in or submitted through the portal, I'm sorry. So the first step would be you submitted a payment request through the portal. The next, and then you have some earnings that you want to submit along with that payment request, but you're not able to do it at the same time you submit your payment request. So what you would do is print off a fax cover sheet once you submit your payment request through the portal. Once you print off that fax cover sheet, any documentation that you have, pay stubs, wage information from a third party, such as the work number or whatever, you will put it behind that fax sheet that you printed off and submit that whole document using the fax number on the fax cover sheet. There's a barcode on that fax cover sheet, and what will happen is once you submit that, through the fax that information in, all that information will be associated with that payment request, so that our processors, and there's some things that are happening behind the scenes, once that information comes in, that case that is sitting in the queue will go to the proper status for our processors to work, because they know that they have all the information they need to work that case. So is that what you're talking about, or is it something different?
Well, I'm not requesting a payment request. I'm trying to submit their wages.
Okay, so this is different. Now, you're submitting what? Okay, it is different. You would not be able to print off a fax document since you didn't submit a payment request.
Right.
You're doing it, so you have to go through
the
manual process, which is faxing, wage information directly to Maximus without the payment request. Mm-hmm. And we still will get those payments, and we will keep the same.
Yes, I did this, and they keep telling me that they can't accept it, and I have to do it through the portal, and I'm just like, I'm not understanding how I'm supposed to submit my client's wages.
Right, right. You're absolutely correct. If you don't submit a payment request through the portal, that is not the method of submitting wage information. You just would need to do it manually, not by way of the portal. You would not print off a fact sheet from the portal. You would just use the... Okay, you got it now?
No, I've tried to fax it to the fax number with the fax cover sheet and their paycheck stubs behind it, and they told me they can't accept that.
Okay. Let me take your name down again. And your EN?
Sure, it's Lorraine. It's Lorraine Brown. Mm-hmm. And the EN is Polishing the Professional.
Okay. Okay, we'll have the... either someone from our EN Payments Department or our provider support manager talk to you about that or clarify, because there has been some confusion about that because we are receiving all of a sudden wage reports from all over the place. You know, we do want you to submit wage reports for ticket to work beneficiaries so that we can get, especially those who have earnings at the SGA level who are still in current pay, and we need to place them in suspense due to worker earnings. So first of all, you can get your outcome claim, and then we can stop, you know, start a work CDR so that the beneficiary can stop receiving those monthly payments and prevent additional overpayments for the beneficiary. So I'm going to have our managers call you, but I can give you the name of our EN payments manager. Her name is Kimberly Cutler. And if you're going to send her an email, it's going to be KimberlyCutler@Maximus.com. And if you have
Maximus.com,
yes. And if you have a specific question, matter of fact, what you could do is you can mention my name. My name is Deborah Tennessee, and I mentioned that I provided her name during the all EN call, and it's an issue about the way that earnings are submitted without payment requests. And in the meantime, that particular department knows what to do when they get in wages, but I still will have a conference with the provider support staff, which is where you received direction on how to submit the wage information, which was not entirely correct because you did not have a payment request. So we'll have to get together and make sure that they're all on the same page.
Okay, what's your name from Tennessee?
Deborah. My name is Deborah Tennessee.
Okay.
Yes.
Deborah Tennessee, and I'll be sure to put your name and let her know that you referred me to her. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
We'll move on to Shamika Baxter with America Works of New York.
Hello.
Hello.
My question was already answered. I'm sorry. Okay. No worries. Thanks.
If you feel that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We'll move on to Pamela Cross with Central Arkansas Disability Services. Please go ahead. Your line has been opened.
Hello, Pamela.
Pamela, please check your mute function. Due to no response, we'll move on to Kirsten Silver with MD Employment Network.
Hi, can you hear me?
Hi, Kirsten, yes.
Okay. A couple months ago, my agency submitted a change form updating some of the information on our EN profile on the Find Help page, as well as updating some information regarding who our contacts are for different areas like suitability, signatory, et cetera. We have received a response that the changes had been made. However, when we go to our EN profile, they are not showing up, and the correct people are still not getting the correct communications from SSA. When I ask our EN specialist about it, she tells me that she's researching it or I don't get a response at all. So I was wondering who I could reach out to or if you guys can give me any feedback on that.
What state are you in?
Maryland.
You're in Maryland. Okay. I would send it to Ian Service and CC Patrice McLean.
Okay. Will do. Thank you very much.
Amy Wallish with Whole Circle Employment Solutions, please go ahead with your question.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi,
my
Amy.
Question has to do with the portal and requesting a payment. We've noticed several times now when we've gone in to request payment that it shows up that the individual has earnings over SGA, and so we click no to submit pay stub. And then it's been bounced back multiple times. We've gotten the notice from you all saying, hey, we need pay stub information. And I'm just wondering, and it's a little bit frustrating because if we knew on the front end, we would just upload them if we had them or not submit a payment. I don't know if there's a glitch or if you guys are aware of that or if other ENs are having that same issue.
I'm sorry, this is Deborah Tennessee. Could you repeat that again? You submit your payment request, and then you get a message that says what? That the earnings are...
So when we go in there, you can choose a yes or no to upload pay stubs or upload earnings, right? So when I go in there, it'll say earnings are on the record already above SGA or something like that. I can't remember the exact language, right?
Okay.
And then the next thing it says... Do you want to submit pay stubs? And I would click no because earnings are already on the record above SGA. Then
okay.
I go through the whole process, submit the payment, and then we get a diary and a week or so later or whatever, we get a notice from you guys saying they're requesting missing information, pay stubs. So it's interesting
okay.
because it says it's already above SGA, but then we get requests asking for information.
Okay. Okay, I believe the message says earnings already proven. What it means
yes.
that there is possibility that there are earnings in SSA's databases or systems somewhere. But when our staff goes to check, those earnings are not verified there. So we would have to come back to you to ask you for pay stuff. And many of the situations where you see that message, the earnings are there and we can move forward with it. But if we're not seeing those earnings already verified, we will have to come back to you and ask you for that. It is not 100% verified earnings in Social Security system. It's really looking around that there's a possibility that there could be earnings. It looks in different places, and sometimes it could be, let's say, it's a quarterly earnings record. And when we go look at that quarterly earnings record, we may even have further breakdown by month. And for a particular month, there are no earnings or less than SGA for that month, but for the other 2 months, it was well above SGA. And the system may have just divided it by three to get an average, what appears to satisfy that payment request. So it's a little bit more work that's done, investigation that's done by our payment staff. So that's why you would probably get that message.
Okay, so even so...
I'm sorry, I was just trying to see if our SSA portal specialist is on the line so that she could weigh in on this as well.
This is Katie. I am here.
did you hear the question and my response?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So the portal does a calculation to come up with a monthly total, but each payment request is verified by a person who goes and checks and makes sure that the monthly earnings are correct. They check all of SSA systems, making sure they match and that the math adds up. So like Deborah was saying, we have Say, for instance, we have the yearly IRS earnings. When you divide by 12, you get that, okay, so for every month in the year, they earned enough for that payment. So the system comes back with you have enough. But then when the person reviewing the case looks at it, they find monthly earnings for one of the months, we'll say, in that year that contradicts it, that makes it seem like, well, more of those earnings were in one month or one quarter than another. So a person sits and does math and determines the actual monthly amount that was earned by the beneficiary for a payment for each claim month, while the system, the portal itself, is just using an average. It's either taking, you know, yearly information, dividing by 12, or quarterly information if we have it, and dividing by 4. But the person making the payment also has access to monthly information sometimes, which will contradict what the system has. It doesn't happen often, but it could just be maybe a particular beneficiary you have. Is it like all your beneficiaries having this, or is it a specific one that you see it happening? It just could be we have monthly wages on this particular beneficiary that you're seeing, and that's why this is happening. I would recommend if you have the pay stub or the verified earnings in front of you and you get that message, and, you know, I would recommend if this happens to you often to just go ahead and send it in, and then you are saving that step.
Yeah, it's typically people, we don't have it or I don't. Yeah. Anyway, thank you. I understand now. It's cleared up. Thank you.
Yeah, it's just, it's a system versus a person. So, I mean, we try to make as accurate a payment as possible. So,
yeah, and we typically have the earnings and we're not submitting because we track all of that as well. So it's, anyway, but it's fine. We will be more careful about that language there. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
And we have Paula Violet with Employment Options. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Paula. Thank you, and welcome to our new people on board from Social Security. I had some concerns about this contact. I mean, I've been an EN since 2002, and I take pride in, I think, being a really good EN. And, you know, we send out all these nice little letters. How was your, you know, are you still at this job? Did you get my correspondence? We personalize everything to our clients, and, you know, and they still don't get back with us. You know, we have raffles. I mean, we do everything we can to try to stay in touch with people. And some people, you know, they think if they don't talk to us, then they're going to be able to dupe Social Security and that nobody's going to find out that they're working. And we find that I can almost predict to you, those that aren't calling us back, that they're working. So I just wanted to make that comment. I'm very concerned that the standardized letters that you want us to document each call that we make to our client is going to pose an unnecessary administrative burden on my company. We send out letters, postcards, birthday cards. They come back with the wrong address. I probably get 30, 40, 50 of those a month. So, I mean, we can certainly take a picture and upload it to their file, but we're not sending out standardized letters, which is, you know, kind of what we're seeing here, that we've got standardized letters we should be standing. So I mean, we spend a lot of time on services that we don't get paid for, you know, a lot.
So Paula, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Gary Rao. So Paula, we're not saying that you have to use the formalized letters that we're sending. That's just suggested language. Okay, so we're not trying to run your business by any means, but we are trying to have oversight of the program, both for the certification of services process and just for the general oversight of the program. And we've now been out and done 100 and some visits, and really the record keeping, generally speaking, among ENs, and I'm not talking about yours, is not exactly where we'd like to see it, and we are subject ourselves to internal audits. So we have to be certain that that there's documentation on your part, so that that's documentation on our part. And if you're sending out cards or whatever, and you're addressing the individual that you're sending it to, and you're telling them that want them to get in touch with you, it's a part of their requirements for their IWP when they sign up for that with you, when they sign that agreement, then we need to be able to see that in your documents when we are when we're certifying the services or you're attempted at services. So that's the whole thing behind this. We're not trying to run your business, but we are trying to ensure proper oversight of the program, it should make it better for you with regard to certification of services, and better for all of us. So that's the intent.
Right. So then we don't have to use those letters that you and keep a separate documentation than what we're already doing, then, if I'm understanding that correctly.
No, I'm not sure what your documentation is itself, but I'm saying that in your records, when we look at something, we want to see what you've actually sent and that it was addressed specifically to the individual and it was sent with some kind of message for that individual as opposed to sort of a generalized marketing thing to all of your beneficiaries, that sort of thing. But no, you don't have to use the letter that we are that we're giving as an example. You can, but you don't have to.
Well, that makes me feel better.
It has to be. Okay, all right. And again, as Kara said, we are going to have this training, so hopefully we'll be able to give some more detailed illustrations of what we're talking about.
And I certainly understand the need for oversight and to make sure that ENs are doing what they said they were going to do, but it's also up to the client to, you know, to do that. And, you know, we only have so much control over them. You know, I can't force them to call me back.
You're absolutely right. But we've been to many ENs that said, oh, yeah, I've called them or I've done this or that. There's no documentation in their in their files to suggest that. So, you know, we've got to pull this and make it a little bit tighter. And for agencies that have their documentation in good order and that they can demonstrate upon review or for certification of services when we request it, then that shouldn't be much of an issue.
Okay, so we don't really need to change what we're doing then. We know we're doing what we can do to stay in touch with our people. It's my best interest because otherwise we may lose them.
Yeah. Well, you still need to follow the number of times that we're talking about that Kara described. If you're already doing that and you have that showing in your documentation, then there shouldn't be an issue.
So some of the documentation we send out is like, okay, we're having our big job fair and we send notifications to all our clients. I mean, to me that's really valuable information. But that would be considered
a
newsletter.
It would be considered a newsletter because you're sending it. You just said you're sending it to all your clients. So
well,
I guess what I'm looking
to
for.
Stay in touch with them with services.
Absolutely, and we're not saying you shouldn't. That's no problem whatsoever. But the issue is whether it would constitute. It depends on each individual situation. I mean, what contact you actually have with them. So. Somebody may have called in, or you may have had a conversation. I mean, then that's great. The more marketing you do to them, that's super. We're not saying that's problematic at all. But when
we
don't
see that as marketing. We see it as career development, but, you know.
Right. Okay. So we can discuss this in more detail with the training. But
sure. Thank you. I appreciate your Okay, well, we appreciate that. I do realize, or should I say we realize,
It is 4:30, and it's supposed to be our end, and we did start late, so we would like to keep the lines open for about another 10 minutes or so, but we understand if you do have to drop off. But before we take another question from the queue, I did want to make some clarifications. I did want to ensure that if you had jotted down Kimberly Cutler's email address, it's actually Kimberly H. Cutler at Maximus.com, and we did include that in the chat. And since I'm thinking about the chat, I have two questions that I'll go ahead and read. Do you want ticket holders that we are working with present at the site visit?
That's up to you. I've personally been on site visits where they've been there, and it's nice to talk to ticket holders, but it's not mandatory.
Okay, thank you. And is there anything SSA can do to help us maintain accurate addressing information?
There's not much SSA can do, but that's, I think, the point Gary was trying to make was if you have regular contact with your beneficiaries and a good rapport with them, they should be letting you know when something changes.
Good. And one more from the chat. If we have a client in an extended education program to prepare for employment, let's say 6 months or longer, are we still required to contact them monthly?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Stephanie, do we have any other questions from the queue?
Looks like we have one more from Stacy Clark with ServiceSource.
All right,
thank you. Go ahead, Stacy.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, hi, Stacy.
Hi, hold on, let me take the speaker. Okay, now I can talk better. I have had, I heard a little talking about this in regards to wage reporting pay stubs to the local field office. Mine has given me different ways that they want it for my beneficiaries. My main question is, can I put them into the portal, the real pay stubs that I get, you know, the hard copies, scan them in when I fax it in, will that be sufficient to the wage reporting through the portal now?
Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay. This is Deborah Tennessee from Maximus. Let me just say what you can send in through the portal. You can submit by way of the portal a payment request. Now, you are not able to submit any attachments or any documentation along with your payment request through the portal. You can just submit that claim. The reason for that is submitting that claim by through the portal, what it does, it creates a work case and the ticket to work system, that's what I'm going to call it. It creates a claim, a work case, and then for each claim that you submit. Now, once you submit all the information on a particular claim, it will ask you whether or not you want to submit, you know, your wage documents. From a previous caller, sometimes the answer would be no, because if you receive a message that the earnings are already proven, you wouldn't have to do it. We do suggest that if you do have primary evidence, such as pay stubs or whatever, that you always submit that through the portal, even if it says earnings are already proven, because we want to key those earnings in, and we want to make sure if possible work CDRs are performed. So if you submit a claim through the portal and you have earnings information pay stubs, print out that fax cover sheet and then send that documentation in later. Now, different situation is if you have wage information pay stubs, but you didn't submit a payment request. If that happens, then what you're going to do is use a regular fact sheet to our provider support staff and send those earnings into Maximus. Maximus will key those earnings in. The difference being it's not going to be associated with a payment request or a claim. We'll make sure those earnings are in the system and that if necessary or if possible, work CDRs can begin on those. So does this answer your question?
You did. And you know what? It's it's been told differently from my local field offices, but let me just let you ask one more follow-up question to what you just said. I totally understand exactly what you said. And I always send in evidence. Even if it says evidence is there, I send it in because of exactly what you said. You know, it could be a little different because I have the real thing. Now, back to the local field office. What my local field office has said, once they've got a full 30-day, you know, the full monthly whatever, you know, these are new people, you know, new ticket people that are just starting to work. They haven't worked in a while. They have said to call a particular Social Security number to report wages. That's how they need to do that. And then what will happen is that work generation thing you just mentioned, that letter, whatever, will be generated and mailed out to the beneficiary to complete that letter. But what I'm hearing you just say, that I can do that on my own the way that you just said for my beneficiaries, and it'll still work the same way?
Let me say this. The wage reporting process is a separate process all its own, and it has many rules.
Okay, okay.
What we're trying to do, let me tell you what Social Security for Ticket to Work is trying to do. What we're trying to do first is to enter earnings into Social Security system of beneficiaries who are currently in an overpayment situation with Social Security because they're continuing to receive monthly benefit payments when really those benefit payments should cease. However, they're still in what we call a current pay situation.
Right.
However, by submitting earnings to us in those situations where you know a beneficiary, and I can use the terminology here that you may be familiar with, phase two milestones and outcomes. Phase two milestones, you can get payments if the beneficiary is in current pay and their earnings are at or above SGA. However, there's a limit to those. So now you have a beneficiary that you've been working with for a long, long time, and every month you're getting a denial. Because the beneficiary is in current pay, even though their earnings above SGA, but they have not, Social Security has not suspended their payments or stopped those payments. What we're trying to do at Maximus is trying to first get those wages in for those beneficiaries because they're in a very delicate position. They have overpayments. Those overpayments increase every month. We want to stop those and suspend them. Now, it's not to say that we don't key in earnings or other beneficiaries whose earnings are less than SGA. And I think you were talking about those for new beneficiaries or new ticket to work beneficiaries who may be at trial work level or above or below. You know, we have priorities as far as keying in earnings. Let me just say this. For the most part, the priority for us will key in those earnings and through the wage reporting process is for those that are at SGA. However, in Maximus, we still, within another system, still enter all earnings that ENs submit with payment requests or, as you may say, without a payment request. Eventually, those earnings should be looked at by the field offices and possibly a work CDR. But they wouldn't be given priority.
Okay. So to summarize, I get exactly what you're saying. I think I just want to do the best thing for my beneficiaries to not have issues, like you just said, in the end, with not proper reporting. Should I continue to have them call that 1-800 number? I don't know it by heart right now. To verbally call that in to kind of create that and then still do it on my part through the portal? Would that be double duty? Is that not a good idea?
I think it's not a bad idea to do that. Social Security will have that way you could make sure because if Social Security already has it and we see that, then, you know, we wouldn't have to key them in twice. But just to be sure, you could TPM will accept those earnings.
Okay.
Patrice, are you on here?
In the queue.
I'm sorry. Stephanie, what was that?
There are no current questions in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Gary. You were asking for Patrice. I'm still here, Gary.
Do you have anything to add to that, or are you good with
No, I'm okay with it. I did want to mention that if even when the beneficiary is reporting their wages to their employment network, it doesn't alleviate them of their requirement to report their wages to Social Security.
Right.
So to the extent possible, we want to encourage them to always send their wages into Social Security. So I agree with what Deborah said. And to answer the individual who's asking the question, yes, where possible, we can't force, but we can strongly encourage that beneficiaries always report their wages.
Okay, appreciate that. There's a question from the chat. How long is the site visit typically?
It can vary. This is Gary. It can vary from a couple hours and sometimes to 3 or 4 hours, depending on the size of the EN and the amount of documentation that we look at. So somewhere in that 2 to 4 hour range.
Okay, thank you. And who do I speak with to help a client get a 3-month extension of Social Security benefits?
If this is Patrice, if they could maybe send their question to the EN service mailbox, that would be great. I am looking for a little bit more context. We're not quite sure how to answer that question. So if you can send it to EN service, we'll see if we can send it to the right department in this specific case.
Sounds good. Appreciate that. As I mentioned, we're after our call time, and I just want to remind everyone that our next call is August 16th, and any questions regarding TPR, we will address in our recap. So I appreciate everyone's patience and understanding in joining us today and all these great questions. This concludes our call for today. Have a great rest of the day.
And this concludes today's call. We appreciate your participation. You may now disconnect.